studio here. It's good to be with you. I invite you to move front further if you like, or if you're comfortable there, that's fine as well. I want to get the projector hooked up. All right, well, good evening again. It's a pleasure to be with you all this evening. And again, like Jethro introduced me, my name is Jared Weaver. I come from Reading, Pennsylvania, or Kenhorst Mennonite Church. It's a small borough just outside of Reading. Actually, across the street from me is considered the Reading City. So it's a picture, a recent family picture. Hang on. It's not a family picture. Let me get this. That's not a good way to introduce my family. I hope they're not offended. All right. That looks more like them. All right. So my wife, Cherie, we've been married almost 10 years, and we have a 3-year-old son, Isaac. He's energetic. My wife is trying to convince him that he's going to be all right going to Bible school, which once he adapts it, I'm sure he'll be fine. And we have a 7-month-old daughter, Anna. So again, we come from Reading. We live in a house. We live in the upstairs in the first floor. We have a cafe. The Lord very clearly opened a door for us to make this possible. So we have a cafe in our basement, and we've been open for about 1.5 years, and this is the first time that we're ever away from it for more than like a day or half a day. So it feels like our first vacation, and except it's not really a vacation, but it is kind of a vacation for us to have the cafe running without us there. So this was a picture last Friday. Cafe, we're blessed with a lot of support from our community, and it's been a great way to get to know a lot of people and build connections. One of my favorite aspects is being able to share scripture with customers and neighbors that now become friends. Currently, we have a men's Bible study every Monday evening, and I just popped in on the camera, and they're sitting around the table having a Bible study now. So I'm blessed by the opportunities that we have there. And I'm not a coffee snob. If you end up drinking coffee or serving coffee to me this week, I'll drink any kind of coffee. I'm not, even though that's what I do for a living, I drink pretty much any coffee. I don't consider myself a coffee snob, but I can tell good quality coffee from none. And this is another picture. We use our children as an avenue to connect with a lot of people. They're often down there with us. Pretty soon Isaac's going to have to wash dishes, and Anna will be making drinks and things like that. So. All right, for Bible study this week, Jethro left it wide open, and I chose to look at the book of Daniel. And we're going to look at about the first 8 chapters, touch on the 9th a little bit. We're going to stay away from some of the controversial prophecy, but I think Daniel has a lot of things that are applicable for us. And I was first inspired on this topic at a Bible school up in the mountains and the hills of Grenada. And a friend of mine, Ryan Horst from Canada, I don't know if any of you know him, but he was there teaching, and my wife and I were cooks that weekend, and he taught on the book of Daniel. And that's inspired me. I've since listened to some different speakers on it, read different books on it, and it's a book that I think we can apply to our lives. So just in a brief summary, there's 3 things I would like to touch on, and that is purpose, prayer, and prophecy. Purpose, we're going to get to tonight in Daniel chapter 1, Daniel purposes. And author, as we go throughout the book, you'll see a theme of prayer. And I want that to be a challenge for us as well. And then prophecy. What percent of the Bible is prophecy? Approximately. 10%. You're a little bit low. I didn't just research this just in the last couple of weeks, but if I remember right, it's over 25% is prophecy. So I think there's many pitfalls in prophecy, but I think there's also a pitfall of not studying prophecy. So we're going to see some wonderful prophecy as we get in, and some that's fulfilled that I think should strengthen our faith as a believer. All right, so just to kind of do a quick pop quiz, what is Daniel chapter 1 on? And hopefully by the end of this week, if you don't know it now, you'll know it by the end of the week. What's Daniel chapter 1 on? Absolutely. So Daniel is a captive. He's brought captive into Babylon, and he purposes not to eat the king's meat. That's chapter 1. Chapter 2. That's your homework to read tonight. Chapter 2 and chapter 3, because that's what we're going to be talking about tomorrow night. Chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar's dream. He has this dream of this image that has a head of gold and a chest of silver, thighs of bronze, and legs of iron. Chapter 3 is a very famous children's story. There's... not quite. That's a little bit later. There is somebody that's peeking during prayer, or when they're supposed to be bowing down, and they see three young men that are standing up, not bowing down to the idol. It's Nebuchadnezzar's golden image. We'll get to that in chapter 3. Chapter 4 is Nebuchadnezzar. He has pride, and he's cut down. He is like a beast for 7 years. And then chapter 5 is Belshazzar's feast, where there is Belshazzar is having a feast with all his princes and rulers, and then there's this hand that starts writing on the wall, and his knees start knocking together. Chapter 6 is Daniel in the lion's den. And chapter 7 is Daniel's vision of four beasts. Chapter 8 is Daniel's vision of the ram and goat. 9 is Daniel prays, and then the 70 weeks vision. And chapter 10 to 12 is Daniel's final visions. We're not going to be touching on that a lot. Time won't allow for that. So that's just a brief summary, and hopefully by the end of the week you can at least have in your head the first 6 chapters, because they're some very fascinating study. So just an overview of what we're going to do this week. Monday night, tonight's background, we're going to, hopefully I won't lose you, we're going to build a bit of the background on the setting for the book of Daniel. And we're looking at how Daniel purposed in his heart. Tuesday, we're going to look at chapters 2 and 3, Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and then the golden image that he sets up. Wednesday is chapter 4 and 5, how God resists the proud. Thursday is chapter 7 and 8. We're going to be looking there at fulfilled prophecy. And that is a fascinating study if you've never studied in chapter 7 and 8. Friday is going to be chapter 6, Dare to be a Daniel. And if we have time, I'll touch on chapter 9 there, the prophecy of the 70 weeks. So let's look at some overview of the book of Daniel. It can be divided into 2 halves. Okay, chapters 1 through 6 are accounts of history. They're stories. They're stories that a lot of children know, and they're fascinating to adults as well. And they're not just made-up stories. They're real stories, I believe, that actually happened. And we have some proof for that as well. And then chapters 7 through 12 are prophecy. Okay, so the book is assembled in 2 halves. You have the first half of history, the last half is prophecy. And it's not in chronological order because of that. Chapters 1 through 4 would have been written, they're history. And then chapters 7 and 8 are written, and you'll see that when we read the chapters. So this here list is in order that the book was written. Chapter 5 was written after 7 and 8 then chapter 9, and the reason we think chapter 9 was written next is because it says in the first year of Darius. Chapter 6, Daniel and the lions then happens sometime during Darius's reign as well. It doesn't say the first year or not, but probably a similar time. And then 10 to 12 later on. All right, some important things to note about Daniel. This is something I didn't know before studying into Daniel or hearing it talked about. Is Daniel's written in 2 languages. Now, when we read Daniel, it's all in English, so we don't think about it. But that's a very significant thing. It's one of the largest portions in the Bible that's written in the language of a Gentile, or not Hebrew, or not Hebrew. So chapters 1 and 2 to verse 4, the beginning of verse 4, and then 8 to 12 are written in Hebrew. And then the in-between section, chapter 2, the last part of verse 4 to the end of chapter 7 is written in Aramaic. And the reason I think that is because that section there between 2 verse 4 to the end of chapter 7 is talking about Gentile history. And we'll get into that. It talks a lot about the Gentile history and how it's affecting. I think that's why Daniel, when he wrote this, he didn't write it in the language, in the Hebrew that the Jewish audience would have known, but in the Gentile language, that in the Aramaic language that everyone would have known. I think it is a reason that we believe that's why he did it that way. All right, Daniel chapter 4 is the only portion, only chapter in the Bible that's written by a Gentile king. Okay, and we'll get to that there. That's a very fascinating account. It's written by a Gentile king, a unique part of it. Another interesting thing is there is nothing bad or negative said about Daniel. As we go through this book, there's nothing bad or negative said about him. Is there anybody else that comes to your mind in the Bible that nothing is negative or bad said about? Joseph, very good. That's the main two, unless somebody can think of someone else. I think that's considered the main two. Some people would say Esther. We don't hear as much about her, but there's nothing bad said about Daniel. In fact, his enemies couldn't find fault with him. It doesn't mean he didn't sin. I'm not trying to say that at all, but there's nothing negative said about him. Daniel has extremely detailed prophecies, and they're very amazing. I hope you enjoy prophecy. And he has some very specific prophecies. And prophecies and seeing fulfilled prophecies can have two different effects on people. They can strengthen a believer's faith. And hopefully that has that effect on you, where you know this book is true because you can see prophecy that's fulfilled. But it can also have an opposite effect. It causes unbelievers to be uneasy because they see this and they say that they see this was prophesied in chapter 7, then they see it come to pass 400 years later, and it makes them uneasy. And because of the detailed prophecy, Daniel is extremely heavily attacked by critics who say it was written after the prophecy fulfilled. They will say that Daniel didn't actually write this book. And one of these evenings, if we have time at the end, I'm going to share some reasons why we can, why we believe that Daniel wrote it. I believe Daniel was written somewhere between 607 BC. BC stands before Christ, so that's like, we're counting, the lower the number, the more recent history it is. We're counting down to the birth of Christ. Daniel was written somewhere between 607 and 530 BC. All right, so this is just from Wikipedia to talk about why people that think Daniel was not written by Daniel, but by someone later. This is from Wikipedia. If you Google it, most sources will say Daniel did not write it. And I'm just quoting here, and the consensus of modern scholarship is accordingly that the book dates to the period 167. So Daniel lived around the year 600. So they're saying it had to have been written 400 years later. The stories of the first half are legendary in origin, and the visions of the second, the product of anonymous authors in the Maccabean century, or the second century BC. So, and then Britannica, numerous scholars date Daniel to the first half of the second century BC. So they do not, because of the detailed prophecy, they realize that either God inspired it or else it's a forgery. And I think Jesus himself validates that Daniel wrote it. Matthew 24:15, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. There Jesus himself validates it, calling Daniel the prophet, quoting from Daniel. So but there's other reasons why we have evidence that Daniel is the one who actually wrote this. All right, so a little bit of, I'm going to do a little bit of background. Try to stay with me. I'll try to make it as simple as I can. But if you're familiar with a man named Abraham in the Bible, he was from, I should have, you know what, I can put a laser on here. Abraham was from Ur. You see the red dot on there? Abraham was from the land of Ur. God tells Abraham to get out of your country, and he's going to take him to a new land, and he's going to make him a great nation. God takes him over to Canaan, and that's where Abraham is. That's where the Jewish nation became a nation there. So just to put a general time frame in our minds, we have creation about 4,000 BC. We have Abraham right around 2,000 BC. So 2,000 years have passed. And now we have Moses. Moses was about 500 years later. And these are just, I'm putting rough dates so that some of these I try to keep in my head so that I kind of have a rough idea when events happen. Solomon would have lived at 1000 BC. And then we're going to go to Daniel at 600 BC. Okay? And then we have Jesus coming, living approximately from year 1 to year 33. So just to give you a general time frame, then we have the Reformation and we have 2026. Today. So the events that we're going to be studying happen right here with Daniel, And then there are also going to be some of the prophecy is going to be happening closer to the time of Jesus. And just to give you a general idea. So most of us are familiar with the kings of Israel. We have King Saul, the first king. Then we have David. He was a good, godly king. His son Solomon was the wisest man that lived. And Solomon had a son, Rehoboam. And under Rehoboam, the nation split. And we have the ten tribes of the north become the nation of Israel. And they're led by Jeroboam. And Jeroboam, he didn't want his people to go travel back to Jerusalem to worship, so he makes his own idols. He sets up two idols for them to worship. And the Bible does not have much good at all to say about the northern kingdom. They fell into idolatry. They were wicked. And God eventually takes them into exile, sends a nation to capture them for their idolatry, for their wickedness. Rehoboam led a nation of Judah, and they were wicked as well, just to put it nicely. They had five good kings that led revivals, and so there is some good about the nation of Judah. And this is just background to Daniel. I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. So the Bible talks about this nation of Assyria, and we're going to, as we go through Daniel, some of it is the fascinating stories of lions and dens. Some of it is going to be nations and who's in control. So the country of Assyria, the Assyrian Empire, this would have been back before the Babylonian Empire. And 2 Kings 15 talks about a king of Israel paying the king of Assyria 1,000 talents of silver not to attack. Chapter 16 says that Ahaz, king of Judah, paid the valuables from the temple to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, to come attack Damascus. Chapter 18. So I talked about the northern nation of Israel being very wicked. And God sends them, and Assyria comes and captures the northern nation of Israel and carries them away captive because they did not listen to the voice of the Lord. About 10 years later, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, comes against Judah. And King Hezekiah is king at the time, and he's a godly king. Israel takes captive around 722. Now King Sennacherib, king of Assyria, attacks Judah at around 712 BC. And Hezekiah, first of all, starts submitting, paying him some of the, stripping the temple of the gold and giving him the gold, paying him off. But then he stops paying his taxes. And Sennacherib comes with an army of a very large army up against Jerusalem to conquer him. And Hezekiah prays, and that night the angel of the Lord killed 185,000 Assyrian troops. Yeah, just to give some background, that's on the nation of Assyria. We forward about 100 years in time, the year 612, there's a man named Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. So Babylon was part of the Assyrian Empire. And Nebuchadnezzar takes control of Babylon, and he goes and he conquers Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire. So now he's taking control. Nebuchadnezzar's son, anybody guess what his name is? It's similar. Nebuchadnezzar. And we're gonna hear a lot about Nebuchadnezzar as we look through Daniel. So, all right, now we're going to get into the final kings of Judah. And the main reason I want to share this is to show that Daniel would have grown up in a godly home. Hezekiah was king of Judah from 716 to 687 BC. And he was a good king. He served God. It says that he trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him there was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor that were before him. Okay, Hezekiah was a good king, very good, godly king. His son Manasseh reigned after him, and he was a very, very wicked king. It says he put up altars of Baal. He offered his own son as a human sacrifice. He set up an idol in God's temple. He was involved with wizards and witchcraft. He was extremely wicked. And because of this, God was going to punish the nation of Israel, of Judah. Manasseh's son Amon became king from 642 to 640, just a very short reign. And he was wicked as well. And then Amon's son began to reign, Josiah. And he was 8 years old. And he was one of the best kings that the nation of Judah had. It says in 2 Kings chapter 23, that like unto him there was no king before him that turned to the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, and with all his might, according to all the laws of Moses. Neither after him arose there any like him. So he was a very good king. He actually reinstated the Passover. Josiah led a major revival in the nation of Judah. How he died is the king of Egypt was coming up to fight at Carchemish against Nebuchadnezzar, and Josiah goes out and tries to intercept him. And Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, says, "Leave me alone. I'm not coming after you." But Josiah attacks anyway, and he's killed in battle. But Josiah was a very, very godly king. His son, Jehoahaz, reigned, took his place, and he reigned for 3 months. Pharaoh Necho, the king of Egypt that had killed Josiah, takes him captive to Egypt and puts his brother, Eliakim, who he renames Jehoiakim, as the king in Jerusalem. So this happens in the year 606, and this background is to get to verse 1 in our lesson. It says, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah." So it was the third year of Jehoiakim that Daniel was taken away captive. In the year 606, Nebuchadnezzar laid siege, and that's when Daniel and his three friends were taken captive, along with many others. And then just to summarize the rest of the kings, Jehoiachin was king after Jehoiakim died, and that's when Nebuchadnezzar attacked Jerusalem the second time, and then Zedekiah was the final king before Jerusalem was just totally destroyed when he rebelled. All right, so the Battle of Carchemish is a very famous historic battle, and that's where the Babylonian Empire kind of took control of the region of Judah. The Carchemish is up here, and the remaining Assyrian Empire and Egypt joined together to fight Nebuchadnezzar from Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar won a decisive battle, and he came down, on his way down, chasing them, he came down through Jerusalem, and he laid siege to Jerusalem. That's the setting, that's where Daniel is taken captive. He lays, after beating the Egyptians, conquering the Egyptians, he lays siege to Jerusalem, and while he's there at Jerusalem, history tells us, outside of the Bible, that he heard that Nebuchadnezzar, he's the general, he hears that his father, the king, Nebuchadnezzar, has died. So he takes the captives from Jerusalem, and he goes back to Babylon and claims the throne. So that's all the background. Hopefully that made sense. But one thing I want to point out before we go further is, so Daniel was taken as a captive in the third year, according to verse 1 of Daniel, of Jehoiakim. So you go back 3 years, Jehoahaz was king before Jehoiakim, and he was only king for 3 months. So it was 3 years and 3 months, approximately, maybe a little bit more, since Josiah died. And Josiah was the guy that served God with all his heart. And we have that as proof that Daniel would have grown up in Jerusalem during a time of revival. And I think that's partly why Daniel has the convictions that he does that we're going to see in this book. Because he had a godly parents, godly home when he was young. So we have Daniel being led away captive to Babylon. Daniel chapter 1. Daniel purposed of heart. I'm going to read the verses. You can follow along in your Bible if you want. I also have them up on the screen. And I'm going to read them and then make comments as we go. It's not a super long chapter. So Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into Jerusalem and besieged it." So this is the third year again, the background we just did. Verse 2. "And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure of the house of his God." So, this was just three years, a little over 3 years after Josiah's godly reign. And notice, I want you to notice in verse 2, the Lord gave Jehoiakim king. God was in charge here. God was in control. He allowed Jerusalem to be conquered and them to be taken away captive. Verse 3, Daniel chapter 1, verse 3, "And the king spake to Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes." So Nebuchadnezzar commands that Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that's like his court officials, would bring some captives. And Isaiah actually prophesies about this. Back in Hezekiah's time, Isaiah said to Hezekiah, and this would have been Josiah's great-grandfather, "And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they be taken away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." So we have prophecy, this being prophesied. And now I want to look at Daniel's credentials. So verse 4, It says, pay attention to this verse. We know more about Daniel because of this verse than we do about most of the famous Bible characters. It says in verse 4, children of whom there is no blemish, well-favored, and skillful in wisdom and cunning in knowledge, understanding science, and as such as had ability to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. So let's look at Daniel's credentials. I made a list of them here. In verse 3, it says, of the king's seed. So Daniel had to be of the royal family. Daniel was probably related, probably quite closely, to King Josiah. And that's why I think he was influenced by his godly parents or godly relatives around him to serve God and to stay faithful. So he's of the royal family. It says they were children. And most likely Daniel was between the ages of 13 to 17, somewhere in his teenage years is most likely the age that he was. Scholars, different people give ranges, but most are in that range there. Because we know Daniel lives, I think it's at least 70 years further. He couldn't have been much younger. He couldn't have been much older than 17. So this just kind of gives you an idea what this was. They had to be good-looking and healthy, well-favored, no blemish. You had to be quick at learning, skillful in wisdom. They had to be knowledgeable. They had to understand science, under mathematics, astronomy. They had to know how to conduct themselves in the palace. It says that they had the ability to stand in the king's palace. And they had to be good in language, that they can learn the tongue of the Chaldeans. So these were the credentials for Daniel. So we know a little bit about him. Now imagine if you have children or if you're in your teens, imagine if you are taken captive out of Bradford and you're taken several hundred miles away and you're probably never going to see your mom and dad again. You're never going to see your family. You're never going to see your town, your house again. You're taken far away captive. Imagine the setting here for Daniel. He's taken away from everything he's known and he's taken to a pagan culture. Verse 6. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave these names. For he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and Azariah of Abednego. We know them more by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's the more common names they're referred to. But it's interesting that Daniel is often still referred to by his original Jewish name. And if you look at the meanings of the names, it's also interesting. You can see Nebuchadnezzar was trying to change them from the Jewish culture to conform them to the Babylonian culture. Daniel's name, the Jewish name, would have meant God is my judge. He changed it to Belteshazzar, which means Prince of Bel. Hananiah meant God is favored. It was changed to Shadrach, meaning illumined by the sun god. Mishael was who is what God is. And Meshach is who is like the moon god. Azariah, Jehovah has helped. It was changed to Abednego, servant of Nebo. So you see, I think this is another, each one of their names, their Jewish names, had a meaning to do with God. And I think that's another indicator that they came from godly homes. They had godly parents that wanted to choose names for their children that had a good connotation. And those names are taken away, and now they're given a name that has to do with an idol or a false god in Babylon. Daniel chapter 8, verse 8. This is the main thrust of this lesson. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. Did I miss a verse? No, I didn't yet. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse likening than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. So they were brought to this palace, and they were, for 3 years, they were going to be fattened up and trained in the Babylonian culture. They were going to be given the king's meat, the very finest food in the kingdom. And here's these young teenagers, probably 14, 15 years old, and Daniel purposes that he's not going to eat this. What was wrong with eating that meat? There's two possible the king's meat. It could have been pork. It could have been or some other meat that the Jewish law forbade. They were not allowed to eat by Moses' law. Or it could have been grain that was offered to idols. The word doesn't give an exact clear meaning. But either way, Daniel knew that it was wrong. And either way, he knew that it was sin for him to eat it. And so he decides that he is not going to do that. And notice in verse 9 how God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. The prince of the eunuchs, you remember from verse 3, his name was Ashpenaz. He was the master of the eunuchs. And God brought favor into his eyes of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So Daniel takes action. Here he is in his foreign land. What would it have even mattered? What would it have mattered if he had nobody would have seen, his parents weren't around, his family wasn't around. He's probably never going to see this family again. Why couldn't he just eat the king's meat and be done with? After all, he's no longer in Jerusalem. But he knows it's wrong. He knows that God said in his law that he's not to do that. And so he purposed in his heart. And I think that's a challenge for each one of us. Are we gonna stand like Daniel did? So Daniel takes action. And he goes to Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs. And he says, can we not eat? Can we have something else to eat other than the king's meat? And Ashpenaz's response, he says, I fear my lord the king, referring to Nebuchadnezzar. And he says at the end, he says, then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. Now, we're going to learn more about Nebuchadnezzar tomorrow night. But Nebuchadnezzar you did not mess around with. He seems to have a very, very quick temper. It says in Jeremiah that he roasted his false prophets over the fire. He didn't just roast them with a joke. He actually roasted them literally. Zedekiah, the king of Judah that rebelled against him, he had his sons killed in front of Zedekiah and then took out Zedekiah's eyes. So the last thing he seen was his sons being killed. In chapter 2, we'll see when his own advisors can't tell him his dream, he threatens to chop them in pieces and make their house a dunghill. So Nebuchadnezzar is a very colorful individual. And I think based off a later chapter, we may see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven. But we'll get to that in a few nights. So Ashpenaz is like, why would I risk? Why would I endanger my head to the king? Why would I challenge him on what he's feeding you guys? So Daniel doesn't give up. And we can learn from Daniel. Daniel persisted. He didn't just say, well, I tried. So God didn't open that door. I'm just gonna eat the king's meat. It doesn't matter. Daniel kept pursuing. So verse 11, then said Daniel to Melzar. Now Melzar was a butler or another, it looks like it's the first person's name, but it's a title of an official in the Babylonian court. So Daniel said to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So now he went down a level. He was at Ashpenaz, sorry. And then he went down to Melzar, who was directly over charge of them. And he didn't ask him. He asked for a test. He says, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse or vegetables to eat and water to drink. So he's giving up the king's fine meat, and he's asking for vegetables and water to drink, something that would not be against the Jewish law. And he says, let's do a test for 10 days. Verse 13, then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. And so he consented with them in this matter and prove them 10 days. This is pretty bold of Daniel. I mean, in a sense, he's standing up against the ruler of the world, Nebuchadnezzar. He is going against what he has commanded. So he has this 10-day test, and at the end of verse 15, at the end of the 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which should eat the portion of the king's meat. Then thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pause. And as for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. So God's the one, he gave them learning, skill and learning. The word learning is often translated as book in other parts in the Old Testament. So I believe that was referring to literature. Gave them knowledge and skill in learning and in wisdom. And God gave Daniel understanding in all visions and dreams. And we'll get to that. We'll see that fulfilled tomorrow night. Verse 18, the last three, four verses of this chapter. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, or he talked, he interviewed them. And among them there was none found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. So they served before the king. There was none found of all Nebuchadnezzar's wise men like Daniel and his three friends. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding, the king inquired of them, and he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm. And Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. It'd be close to 7 years later. Let's just recap a little bit before the second buzzer goes. Daniel 1, some things we can learn from here. Discernment. Daniel realized that eating the meat was wrong. He knew that it was against what God had commanded. And he determined, he purposed in his heart that he was going to not eat it. And I think he did that before. I think it didn't just happen right there when the king set the plate in front of him. I think he had decided before. And I think for us, that's wise. To decide in our hearts that we're not going to do something. When the temptation is right there in front of us, it is much harder to say no to. But to purpose in our heart, no, we will never do that. We're going to stand strong. We're going to be like Daniel. Daniel resisted evil. Daniel stood strong even when he's far away from home. How many teenagers today would do that? Far away from home in another culture, different name, different language being spoken, and they're standing strong to what God has commanded them. And that's a challenge for us as adults. He voiced this disagreement. Daniel asked Ashpenaz for an exception. He didn't just be passive about it. He asked for an exception. And then when it didn't work out, he tried again. He persisted. He had courage. Going against the orders of the kings, it could have very easily put his life in danger if Nebuchadnezzar would have found out about it. And again, I said this already, but he persevered. He asked Melzar after Ashpenaz declined. And he was respectful when he asked for this. He requested and he beseeched, are the words in the King James, when asking for an exception. There's just some notes, I think some takeaways we can have from chapter 1. Who was in charge in chapter 1? I want you to notice this. Verse 2, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Verse 9, God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Verse 17, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. And I think we'll see the sovereignty. We'll see how God's in control as we go through the book of Daniel. Again, I'm really excited about the next couple of nights as we look at some very fascinating stories that are often labeled as children's stories. Tomorrow night, we'll look at Daniel chapter 2. And I invite you to read that if you have time. Tomorrow, I'll read Daniel chapter 2. And we're going to read about Nebuchadnezzar. He has this dream, and he makes this preposterous demand of his wise men, of Daniel. He says, you have to tell me the meaning of the dream and what the dream is. And it's a very, very colorful account. They argue back and forth, the king's wise men and the king. So I invite you to read Daniel chapter 2 and chapter 3 for tomorrow night. We're going to go through them fairly quickly, but I think there's some good lessons for us in them. All right. Well, thank you for your attention tonight. And is there any questions? Anything that stood out to you that you wanted to share? If not, I thank you again for your attention. I will let you return to your seats, and the children will be coming up here in a minute.